Back in the day, Amanda and I used to take long-ass road trips whenever we could string a few days off. We both lived out east, Delaware, and any excuse to get the hell out of town was a good one. We'd plan our routes around restaurants that we'd seen on TV or weird Airbnbs in the middle of nowhere. Long weekends, holiday breaks, and the occasional mental health Monday that we'd call in sick for. We made it a habit to drive hundreds of miles with no real goal except fun and escape. We were in our mid-20s. Hangovers were brutal but recoverable. Every trip ended up with greasy food, sore backs, and stories that we'd never tell our mothers. Amanda liked to drive. She said it helped her feel in control. I didn't mind. I liked being the co-pilot, scrolling through playlists, reading old printed out directions from MapQuest, or watching the little TomTom GPS freak out when we took another wrong turn. Later, we upgraded to smartphones, which made travel a lot smoother at first. What used to be us just sticking to the big highways and familiar exits turned into a game. Who could find the fastest shortcut, the weirdest detour, the most backwoods route that shaved off 20 minutes? We'd zoom in on the map, pick some obscure little offshoot that looped around a mountain or snake through farmland and give it a go. Usually, we'd end up on a gravel road surrounded by cornfields or pass through towns with one gas station and no stoplights. Sometimes it was a bust and we'd backtrack half an hour. Other times it was magic, like when we found that speakeasy in Kentucky just by chasing a shortcut off I-64. We always felt like we were onto something, like real explorers. But that one trip through West Virginia, that one changed the game. That was the one that soured us on the shortcuts. I can still remember Amanda tapping on the screen and saying, "This will save us at least 90 minutes. Look." County Road 217 cuts right through the hills and drops us off into Charleston from the north. And I said, "Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's roll." And God, do I wish I would have said no. The road narrowed fast. We were only 10 or 15 minutes into the shortcut, and already the shoulder had disappeared. The paint on the asphalt was mostly gone now, and we hadn't seen another vehicle since we turned off the highway. I held the phone in my lap, tapping to zoom in on the blue line that we were following. Amanda had both hands on the wheel, sunglasses sliding down her nose as she squinted into the sun. "You sure this is right?" she asked me. "Yeah," I said. "Cuts 90 minutes, comes out just west of Charleston. We skip three mountain curves and a whole mess of Sunday traffic." Amanda made a face. "It just looks empty." "It's fine," I said, even though I was starting to feel a twitch in my gut. The map showed a bunch of little townships along this stretch, like stepping stones through the hills. Burnwood, Cardam, Ebb Hollow. But so far, nothing. No towns, no houses, no signs of life, just endless turns through dry pines and crests over that gave way more to the same. The road dropped into a valley and kicked up a cloud of dust as we passed a rotting billboard for Guthrie's world-famous smoked meats. The thing was bullet-pocketed and hanging on by a single corner. Amanda didn't say anything, but I could tell she was just as put off as I was. We passed a cluster of old trailers that looked long abandoned, a busted-out sedan half swallowed up by the weeds, a barn with its roof peeled off like a sardine can. I felt my stomach knot tighter. "I think these towns are dead," I said, and Amanda glanced over at me. "Huh?" "Boom towns, maybe. Mining or rail. They're still on the map, but they haven't been towns in decades now." I could see her chew that over, then she shook her head. "You want to turn around?" We were 25 minutes in by then, and I stared at the screen. The shortcut was almost halfway done. "Nah," I muttered. "Let's just keep going. We might as well finish it now." Amanda nodded, but she didn't smile again after that. The road narrowed again and curved through this shallow ravine. On either side, there were husks of buildings, clapboard houses gutted by fires, a post office with ivy growing through its windows, a school bus with no wheels, and a family of crows nesting on the roof. We passed this old wooden sign that said Burnwood Pop 214, then below that, spray painted in red, "Not anymore." I think that should have been the moment that I said screw it and called it, but I still didn't do it. I told Amanda that we were probably close to the other side, maybe another 10 miles, maybe 15. That wasn't a lie. I just didn't want to admit that I'd made a bad call. A few miles later, Just when the gas light blinked on and Amanda let out this sharp shit, we saw it. Hadley Springs. A crooked white sign marked the entrance, swaying on rusted chains. The town itself was better preserved than the others. Buildings with full roofs, intact windows, and a main drag that ran straight through. No trash, no graffiti, and cars parked along the curbs like residents had just stepped inside for lunch. But there was nobody outside. We rolled past this small diner with an open sign, unlit, a barbershop, an insurance office, a church with no name. Not one single person, no movement, no sound, just the soft roll of our tires and Amanda whispering, "This is weird." "Yeah, I know," I responded. "Just keep driving." We were maybe halfway through the town when the engine made that low burble sound that it does before it runs completely dry. "We're not gonna make it," Amanda said, panic creeping up into her voice. And then, as if on cue, a gas station appeared on the corner. Small, squat, old school. Just two pumps and a little shack of a building beside them. There was a man out front. He looked to be in his early 30s, thin as a wire, wearing a sweat-darkened flannel and faded jeans. His hair was long and yellow-white, tied back into this greasy ponytail. He was sweeping something off the concrete. As we pulled in, he leaned the broom up against the wall and turned towards us with a grin. Amanda eased her window down. "Y'all just passing through?" he asked. His voice was thick with that mountain drawl, every word dragging. Yeah, Amanda said. "We're headed west. Took a shortcut." He laughed. "A lot of folks do that. GPS will send you to all kinds of ways out here. Usually come in thinking there's more to see. Usually the same thing, too." "What's that?" I asked him. He shrugged. "That the place don't look right." Amanda handed him a 20. "We just need enough to make it to Charleston." He nodded and started pumping gas. We watched him through the side mirror. I didn't want to look around, but I did. And what I saw chilled me more than anything yet. Behind the diner window, two faces staring out. Not blinking, not moving, just watching. Across the street, in a curtained upstairs window, a silhouette. Broad shoulders, head tilted like it was trying to listen. Then the other window, and another. All of them still, and all of them focused directly on us. They didn't look off enough to scream like horror movie style. They weren't mutants or monsters, they were just off. Like they'd been raised up in a place where both daylight and manners weren't commonplace. When the man finished, he capped the tank and came back around, handing Amanda her receipt with a look that I won't forget. "You girls are lucky," he said. Amanda blinked. "What?" "Coming through during sunup," he said. "Most folks come after dark, and when they do, they don't get to leave." He let that sentence hang there like a noose. Then he smiled and tapped the roof of the car. "Y'all drive safe now." "What do you mean by that?" The guy just winked. "Best get going," is all he said. "Less you want to stay and feel some southern hospitality." The guy then licked his chapped lips. We didn't wait. Amanda peeled out of there like she was chasing God himself. The road out of Hadley Springs curved hard to the left, then pitched upward through this series of hills that seemed to go on forever and ever. We didn't talk. Amanda's knuckles were white bone on the steering wheel, and I kept looking behind us through the side mirror, convinced that we'd see something or someone following. But the town stayed behind us, tucked into a valley like an infected wound. "Don't say anything," Amanda finally muttered, eyes locked on the road. "Just don't." And I didn't. Not until we hit the main highway again, 30 miles later, and civilization came rushing back in a form of roadside motels, waffle houses, and blinking lights of Sheets gas stations. Amanda pulled in and parked, and we sat in silence for a moment, letting the AC hum between us. Then she said, "What the hell was that?" Yep. I shook my head. "I don't know. I kept thinking they were going to come out and try something or stop us." She looked over. "That guy at the gas station, what do you think he meant by that, about people staying?" "I don't know," I said again. "Maybe it was nothing, maybe it was just some kind of joke." Didn't sound like a joke to me. And I didn't respond to her. We went inside, bought some water and some chips, and the cashier didn't even look up. Amanda leaned against the counter while I paid and said, "You ever been so scared that you felt it in your teeth?" I nodded back at her. That night we got a cheap room, double beds, and a TV bolted to the dresser. We didn't go out for drinks like we planned to either. We didn't order food. We just sat in those same clothes that we wore all day, watching reruns and half listening for engine noises outside. Eventually, Amanda passed out. I didn't, though. Not until the sky went from black to blue, and I knew the worst part of the night was over. I kept thinking about the creeps watching us from the windows. We took the long route home, highway all the way. No more back roads, no more shortcuts, and every time Amanda brought up a new trip, a new detour that she read about online, I shut it down before she could even finish. That was 5 years ago. We don't travel together anymore. Nothing bad happened between us, no falling out or anything. It just got real after that one. I never go through West Virginia without a full tank of gas anymore either. I used to hike alone all the time, through creeks, up mountains, across long stretches of forgotten forest trails. Didn't matter. If I had a pack, a few granola bars, and a decent forecast, I was out the door. There was nothing like being off-grid, far from people, where your thoughts could stretch their legs a little. I used to brag about the number of solo trips that I'd done. My friends thought I was nuts. They'd hit the gym or go drink downtown, and I'd be halfway up some canyon in silence, watching the shadows shift across the stone. Then I made the wrong turn. It happened 3 years ago, and it changed everything. I still hike, yeah, but only with groups now. Crowded trailheads, well-labeled loops, paper maps in the pack, and fully charged GPS clipped to the strap. I stick to the popular stuff, where you're guaranteed to pass a dozen dogs and soccer moms before noon. If it's not paved or packed with REI dads, I don't want it. All because of that one day, that one fucking shortcut. I was hiking Wilshire Wash, a long, winding creek that cuts through a mix of rec areas and wilderness. Families hung out by the parking lot, splash in the shadows, but the deeper you go down, the fewer signs there are. Less noise, less people, and that's what I wanted. Quiet. I pushed upstream for a few hours, deeper than I'd ever gone before, until it was just water, trees, and the breeze through the canyon walls. It was beautiful. And then I got smart, or at least I thought I did. I told myself I could cut time on the way back, save my legs a few miles, and that shortcut nearly got me killed. Wilshire Wash has always been my favorite. Secluded, winding, clear enough to drink straight from. Families usually hung out near the trailhead, barbecuing or letting kids splash around in the wide pools. But I wasn't there for that. I wanted distance, solitude. The further up the wash I went, the quieter it got. Hours passed, and the trail thinned into deer tracks. No signage, no people, just water, rock, cottonwoods, and time. That day, I pushed harder than usual, deeper than I'd ever gone before. I didn't really have a goal in mind, I just wanted quiet. I passed two dry forks and an old beaver dam. Even this old elk skull caught in a tangle of willows. Eventually, I found a hidden waterfall spilling off into a sunlit pool, deep and green. No footprints, no wrappers or graffiti. So I took off my boots, let my feet soak, and cracked open a tin of sardines that I packed with some trail mix and dried mangoes. For a long time, I just sat there listening to the water. Everything else felt distant. Work, bills, texts. This is what I came out here for. But as the light shifted and the shade began to stretch, I realized just how far out I'd gone. I figured I had to be at least 5 or 6 miles out, maybe more. And this wasn't flat, easy terrain either. It would be a very long hike back. That's when the shortcut idea started to crawl up in my brain. I noticed earlier how the creek twisted and curled around big hills and those rock bluffs. If I just cut across one or two of those big loops, I could shave off a mile, maybe two. It made perfect sense. The creek always led back to the lot. It wasn't like I could get lost if I kept tracking toward water. So I did. At the first bend, the creek wrapped wide around a red dirt hill. I climbed up straight, loose rocks and high desert brush, topped out sweating and picked up my way down the backside. Sure enough, there was water, snaking through cottonwoods at the bottom. That saved me 20 minutes easy. I felt super smart and capable. I tried it again. The second shortcut was trickier. The climb was longer, steeper, and choked up with deadfall. My thighs burned halfway up, but I could already see where the creek had curled back on itself, so I pushed hard, scraping through the sage and cactus. And that's when I saw a fence. Chain link about 6 feet tall, bent and bowing but still upright, running straight across the ridgeline and into the trees on the other side. No signs, no barbed wire, just a rusting wall between me and what I figured was the shortest path home. I followed it maybe 40 yards until I found a spot where the bottom was peeled up. Not much, maybe a foot of space, but enough for somebody desperate or dumb enough to squeeze through. I didn't think twice. I dropped to my belly and wormed through it. My backpack scraped, but I made it. The terrain beyond was different. Flatter, shadier, trees set further apart. Everything was overgrown but somehow looked clearer, like it had been maintained long ago and then left to rot. There were crushed beer cans in the dirt, a rusted axe head and the roots of a juniper. Something about the air felt off, though. I kept moving. The shortcut had to pay off soon, right? 10 minutes in, I stepped out of the trees and saw it. A house. One story and grayed out. Plywood nailed over some windows, but not all. A rusted propane tank slouched beside it, with the water silo half swallowed up by weeds. There was a dirt road winding from the opposite side, one that I hadn't seen on any of my maps. I stopped walking. It looked old, but not abandoned. Not ancient ruin, not collapsed shack, just paused. Like somebody stepped away for a season and then just let it all fall into disrepair. That's what I told myself, at least anyway. Then this sharp crack split the air. Something struck the dirt a few feet to my right. Another blast hit the dead log just behind me. The sound echoed, loud, close, and unmistakable. A rifle. Then came a voice barking from the house.
You lost, boy?
I froze, heart pounding. My mouth opened, but nothing came out. The third shot hit the tree behind me so close bark exploded off into my hair. And that's when I finally ran. I turned and sprinted, crashing through the brush like a spooked animal. The hill that I just climbed up felt twice as steep on the way down. My boots skidded on the loose rock and sand. Another shot cracked out behind me. This one sounded a lot closer. I didn't look back, just dropped low, arms pumping, adrenaline burning hot in my throat. The slope blurred past in streaks of color, red dirt, torn limbs, flashes of sky. I slipped once and caught myself on this scrub oak, tore skin clean off my palm, but I kept going. I hit the fence at full speed and dropped to the ground, shoving my pack through first. My shirt snagged on the mesh, but I didn't care. I wormed under the hole belly first, hard hammering, lungs heaving like I just ran a marathon. Behind me, another shot rang out. I heard it slice through something. It wasn't bark this time either. It sounded like metal, maybe the silo, maybe the fence. Once I was clear, I just kept moving. Down the hill, sliding sideways through gravel and pine needles, I found the creek again. Jumped straight in, boots and all, splashing down like it would save me. I didn't stop to catch my breath, I just kept moving until the trees closed in again, and the terrain started to look like Welser Wash again. Somewhere behind me, the man was still yelling. Something about property rights, something about hikers think they own the world. Then I didn't hear anything, just the water and the wind and my gasping breaths. I followed the creek, pushing as fast as my legs would go, every noise in the brush setting off alarms in my brain. A snapping twig, a bird taking off, even the sound of my own pack shifting felt too loud. I kept imagining him showing up on the trail in front of me, waiting, with that rifle, but he didn't, and I didn't see him again. It took me nearly 2 hours to get back to the main trail. My socks were soaked, one knee bloodied from a fall that I barely even remember. I passed two kids in flip-flops carrying pool needles, and I nearly burst into tears. Their mom looked at me funny, like she could tell that something had gone wrong, but nobody said anything. At the trailhead, I climbed back into my car, locked the doors, and sat there shaking for 15 minutes straight. I didn't even take off my boots, I just sat with my hands on the wheel, staring straight ahead while my brain tried to put the pieces in some kind of order. Eventually, I drove off. I didn't report it, didn't tell the rangers, didn't file a complaint or call the police. And I know how that sounds, but you have to understand, this wasn't some idiot taking pot shots from a distance. This guy meant it. He wanted to scare me, maybe even worse. And I knew deep down in my gut that if I went back with somebody in uniform, it would turn into something crazy. Besides, it was really on me. I made that call to go off trail. I saw the fence and went under it. He wasn't really wrong about that part. Still, I think about it constantly. I think about how close I was to stepping up to the house. About what if I knocked on the door? What if I hadn't noticed the first shot in time? I hear that crack sometimes when I close my eyes. Feel the sting of the bark still hitting my face. Smell the metal of the fence when I hit the dirt to crawl under it. That day ruined solo hiking for me. I don't care how many apps or GPS trackers I have now, how prepared I think I really am. I'm not going out alone. Not where there's nobody to hear you scream. Not where a wrong turn drops you into somebody's crosshairs. I still hike to this day, but only with others. Only where there's cell service. I study maps. I look for trip reports. And I don't just wing it anymore. No matter how scenic the route might actually be. And I never, ever take shortcuts. I was 16 when my mom took me on that trip. It was supposed to fix things between us. She worked nights and I skipped school. We barely talked unless somebody was yelling. It wasn't like we hated each other. We were just two people living in the same house, orbiting each other and pretending that it didn't hurt. I think she thought I was gay. I thought she was checked out, just making shit up about each other. She rented a car and planned 5 days through the Midwest, said we'd see the ocean, eat everywhere worth eating, talk if we wanted to, or just listen to music if we didn't. I remember standing in the driveway, watching her pack snacks and a cooler full of gas station drinks like we were going to summer camp. She looked hopeful. I didn't have the heart to be a dick about it either. Truth is, it was a good trip, great even. We drove through Kansas and Oklahoma, laughed at dumb billboards, crushed barbecue in Houston. She played her old playlist, Fleetwood Mac, Duran Duran, and I played some of mine. There were hours where we just vibed, no tension, no weird pauses, just a mom and her kid in a rented SUV heading toward the saltwater. I didn't think anything would ever feel that normal again. But there was one part of the trip that I still can't talk about without getting those pins and needles feeling inside my hands. It wasn't supernatural or anything, we just stumbled into a part of the map that nobody was supposed to see. We were already feeling good by the time that we hit the coast, like maybe this whole thing had worked. Then we made a wrong turn trying to cut across Texas and everything flipped. We were in Texas when it happened, middle of nowhere, somewhere between Corpus Christi and God knows what. After we hit the ocean and taken our selfies, Mom decided we saved time on the way back by skirting the loop. "It'll be faster this way," she said, squinting at the GPS, waving off my half-hearted objections. I couldn't really argue. I wasn't old enough to drive, didn't understand maps, and wasn't really paying that much attention anyway. I just wanted to get back to the hotel and pass out with the AC blasting. The road we turned onto wasn't even paved the whole way. Big cracks, long patches of gravel, brushed so close that it scraped the side mirrors. But it was quiet. After about 20 minutes, I realized we hadn't passed a single car, not one. Just dried up fields, barbed wire fences, and the occasional buzzard circling overhead. Mom kept her cool for a while, then she turned the music down. Then she cleared her throat a lot. She turned the music off completely. "We're fine," she said, gripping the wheel a little tighter. "We're still heading north." I checked my phone. No bars, of course. Just that little red X that meant that we were off grid. "No service," I said. "Yeah," she muttered. "No kidding." We passed a cattle gate with a rusted sign that had no words, just a symbol that looked like a warning. Then came the buildings, seven or eight of them, dumped in the middle of nowhere, like somebody gave up on a project halfway through. Concrete blocks with doors that didn't lock, a steel warehouse with a faded biohazard sign. One of the buildings had a tarp blowing on the roof and a giant red stencil that said, "Test area, no entry." Mom slowed the car. "The hell is this place?" I didn't answer her. I was too busy looking at the yellow radiation stickers peeling off one side of the sheds. "I don't like this," she said. She put the car in reverse, but her hands were shaking. "We shouldn't be here. This is some kind of military testing or something." "Just go," I said. please. She whipped the wheel around and floored it. Gravel spit up behind us. We didn't say a word for the next 7 miles. When she finally slowed down, she said, "We must have missed a turn." I leaned over the center console, peering through the windshield, trying to see anything familiar. That's when we passed that same cattle gate, the same rusted sign, the same buildings. "No," Mom whispered. "We didn't." "We're back," I responded. "We just went in a full circle." We both looked at each other and then at the road in front of us. She didn't stop the car this time. She just turned left instead of right, kept her foot on the gas. I kept checking my phone like an idiot, praying for a bar, but still nothing. 15 minutes later, a new sign appeared, metal, sun-faded, and covered in stickers and bullet holes. It said, "Mexico, 18 miles. Mom then hit the brakes so hard that our seatbelts locked up. "Mexico," she said. "Okay, this can't be right." But it was. There was nothing else around. No houses, no businesses, just endless flat desert and that sign. The GPS was now frozen. The phone was dead. We were cooked in the middle of Texas and now somehow looking at the Mexican border, almost like it was the last option. Mom pulled over now. We were both breathing heavy. She dug around the glove box for the charging cable and plugged her phone in. "We just need like 5 seconds of signal, that's all." The phone powered up and we watched the bars. The charging cord was a 10-foot supercharger for emergencies. Now we could try to send texts over without it burning up the battery. But nothing. I got up and held it in the air. Turned slowly in the circle, thinking it would help, but still nothing. Just hot air, distant thunder, and a sky that was starting to dim around the edges. "I think maybe we should call 911, I said. My mom shook her head. "And tell them what? That we got lost and saw a building?" I guess she was right, even if I hated it. So we sat there drinking the last of the water, splitting a bag of trail mix while the heat started to bleed out of the day. The wind picked up. Somewhere in the distance, something metallic clanged like a gate slamming shut. Then my mom stood up. "Dust," she said, pointing. "There's a car coming." Sure enough, a cloud of dust was rising in the distance, a big one. We both got up and started waving, and when that didn't feel like enough, I leaned over and started honking the horn in bursts. The headlights flashed back. The SUV, black, fast, and spotless, peeled off the road and came straight at us, eating up the ground like it had a purpose. By the time it skidded to a stop, we were standing in front of our rental, hands in the air. The doors opened and 5 men stepped out. They were all dressed sharply, pressed shirts, dark jeans, heavy boots, gold chains, sunglasses, even though the sun was mostly gone now. One had a cigarette burning between his fingers. All of them had rifles, and not one of them was smiling. They said nothing, just fanned out in front of us, and then one motioned to the car. My mom looked and whispered, "Don't move." But it didn't matter. Another man waved us off, quick and urgently. We stepped aside, and as soon as we did, two of them started yanking open our doors, going through the vehicle like they owned it themselves. I started to say something, anything, and one of them hit me. Just one time, metal against the side of my head and lights out. I came to on my knees in the dirt, ears ringing, head pounding. My mom was crying softly next to me, hands still up. The men were laughing now, chattering in Spanish, but we didn't understand. Tossing our snacks into the dirt, pulling wires from the dashboard. One of them held up my backpack and shook it out like it might be hiding something valuable. When nothing came out but a crushed protein bar in my hoodie, he threw it on the ground and spit on it. The one who hit me just stood nearby, watching. No expression. I don't even think I saw him blink. None of them asked any questions. None of them said what they wanted. They never pointed the guns away either. So every second felt like it might be our last. And then just like that, they stopped. One of them whistled, a sharp casual note like somebody calling a dog. The rest turned and headed back to the SUV. They piled in fast, revved the engine, and spun off in the direction they'd come from, kicking up the same trail of dust that they'd arrived with. My mom helped me to my feet. My head throbbed, and I could already feel the bruise blooming up against my cheekbone. I asked her what they took, and she said, nothing. They just looked. We got back in the car and just sat there for a moment, doors locked, engine off. The silence afterward felt alien. I watched the sun finish dipping behind the horizon and waited for tears to come, but they didn't. I was too stunned for that now. "I'm driving," Mom said finally, and I didn't argue with her. We turned the car around, rolled slowly in the opposite direction, and this time it only took about an hour and 45 minutes to see lights, a town, real pavement, cell signal. She sped into the first gas station we found, parked half on the curb, and ran inside. I stayed in the car, blinking at the overhead fluorescence while people walked in and out with bags of chips and coffee. A few minutes later, she came back with a clerk and said the police were on their way. An officer showed up in less than 10 minutes. He looked more bored than he did concerned, asked where it happened, asked if we had any names, plates, or any idea which direction they'd gone. My mom explained to him that we'd been lost, and we thought that we were near the border, that we'd run into, she hesitated, some men with guns. He didn't write much down, he just nodded a lot, told us we're lucky, then added that we shouldn't be driving around that area without a reason. He didn't say it like a warning, he said it like a judgment. They called in an EMT, who checked my head, cleaned the cut, then asked if I wanted to go to the hospital. I said no, I want a shower, a bed, and I wanted to never ever think about any of this again. We got a hotel a block from the police station, basic room, two full beds, nothing fancy. Neither of us spoke for a very long time. I showered, sat on the edge of the bed in a towel, and watched my mom scroll through her phone with a blank look on her face. At some point, she put it down and looked at me. "Are you okay?" I nodded. Then she said, "You saved us, you know, waving them down like that, getting their attention." I shook my head. "No, I didn't. I got us into it. If I hadn't honked..." She cut me off. "We were already in it. You did what you thought would help us." That was the closest thing we ever got to talking about it. After that, we mostly just let it fade. Told the story once to my aunt, but left out all the stuff that would make people uncomfortable. Made it sound almost like an accident, like a moment that passed as quickly as it came. But it didn't pass. It stuck with me, still does. I think about those buildings sometimes. About what kind of place has nuclear signs with no fence, no guards, and no name. I think about how we loop back without realizing, like the desert didn't want us to leave. I think about those men in the SUV, how calm they were, how organized, how we were nothing to them, just two Americans who took the wrong road. That trip ended up fixing a lot between us, believe it or not. Not the ocean, not the playlists, not the barbecue, just surviving.